So today for this Sunday Feast Lecture, we have a special topic, Family Life as an Ashram, Secrets of Success. So this is, of course, a big topic. In fact, I'm just now printing my fifth book on this topic. I was hoping I have it ready for this visit, but no, it is still being printed. So it's a whole book, actually. So, and we have today one session and tomorrow evening also one. So today on this Sunday program, I just want to introduce the topic a little bit. And then for those who are more deeply interested, you will have to come back tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the evening, and there we continue with the discussion. So, let me first of all recall one statement from the Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, verse 69, where Krishna says, "What is day to the common person is night to the introspective sage, and vice versa. What is night to the common person is day to the introspective sage." So in other words, you know, the outlook on life of a common person who is not engaging in any kind of a spiritual process is very, very different from those people who are practicing a spiritual path, who are striving for God consciousness. Very, very different. So different that it can be called as different as day is from night. Yes. And actually, that in itself is a whole deep topic. But we can basically say, what is success in material life may very well be undesirable in spiritual life, and vice versa. For example, material life is, what's the goal of material life? The overall money, because money stands for
enjoyment.
Yes, without money, difficult to enjoy life. So the goal of material life is sense enjoyment. And out of all kinds of sense enjoyment, which one is considered to be the topmost?
Sex life.
Sex life, yes. So now looking at devotional life, bhakti yoga, there we try and do the opposite, right? We try to, you know, subdue and minimize sense gratification so we can develop a higher taste, a higher level of enjoyment. There is a higher level of enjoyment than sense gratification. Definitely there is, you know. And sex life, we keep to a bare minimum, you know. Ideally, only for conceiving Krishna conscious children. So, wow, there we see already. I think it can't be more opposite than that, right? So now, if we understand that, it becomes very clear that also married life, in material life and in spiritual practice, are very, very different. They have a very different outlook, a different approach, a different vision. I mean, yeah, so different. We can almost say, we can imagine on this end is mundane family life, on the other end of the spectrum is Family life as an ashram. By the way, ashram means not a building, but it means a place conducive for spiritual development. It brings along a certain consciousness and mindset. So once again, here we have family life in mundane life, and on the other end we have family life as an ashram, where the whole goal is spiritual development, reaching God consciousness, developing our love for Krishna. So and in between is a broad spectrum of all kinds of shades and grades and mixtures. And we can say, as we practice Krishna consciousness, we should transform our life, our tastes, our likes and dislikes, our worldviews, our patterns of behaviors, our very heart, so that bhakti can develop there. So that also includes that we transform our way, how we want to arrange our family life. We want to spiritualize our family life and actually gradually turn it into an ashram, which means that self-realization is the goal, and God or Krishna is in the center. So it's a whole journey, actually. And unless we know what it means that family life is an ashram, then we don't even know what to strive for. But we have to kind of know the goal, what it should look like. And then we can work out step by step how we can get there. So I guess we can say that our ISKCON society is rather young. It's only 50 years old, which is not very much. And I dare say we have not quite gotten there yet, that our family life can really be called an ashram, right? It is a whole transformational journey. And it's not surprising, because we are surrounded by the opposite propaganda, the materialistic culture, the worldview of sense enjoyment being the all in all, of sex life being the highest enjoyment. We are heavily surrounded by this, even here in beautiful Ljubljana. So we can't escape that so easily. And that conditioning is actually very subtle, and it's very deep, and it's not so easy to transform. It requires some internal work, actually. Yes. So basically, I think we can all say that we are all longing for this perfect and sublime loving relationship. Isn't it? Aren't we all longing deep, when we look deeply in our heart, we all longing for love, right? Yes, I think if we are honest, we can admit that. And that is so, because actually the need of the soul is exactly that, to give love and to receive love. That's one of the basic needs of the soul. And we can almost say that all our activities we perform here in this world, they are in one way or another, directly or indirectly, attempts to find this love. Yes. Even to become successful in life, in our profession. So what are we striving for? We are striving for recognition, which is in a way a form of love. Right? Yes, yes. Then also all kinds of social activities we may be doing, doing good for others in our community, and. Or even consuming goods, you know? It's also some kind of compensation for not finding this perfect and sublime love, even eating, overeating. There we are also compensating because of this need for love not being fulfilled, or even having pets, a dog, a cat, you know? We trying to have somebody who we can love and who loves us. And then, of course, family relationships. I mean, really, we can boil it down to that thing, that any activities we do in this world, they're actually some kind of attempt to achieve and find this love, or to compensate the lack of love. And of course, the man-woman relationship is the ultimate thing where we think, yes, that is the way where we find the sublime love, you know? But I guess many of us may have already had some little disappointing experiences. Right? Yes? Have we? Yes. Yes. It often starts all so rosy, but then there's some frustration there, so much disappointment, broken heart experiences. Oh my God. Right? Yes. So, and that is so, because actually this man-woman relationship is not meant to fulfill this longing for this perfect and sublime love. We are looking in the wrong direction. Yes. Unfortunately. I mean, I know one person, he's some relative of mine. He was married 5 times, always thinking, I didn't marry the right one. Let's try again. And he didn't even get the idea that maybe, he's looking for the wrong thing here. He's got the wrong expectations. He didn't even get that idea. But thank God we have our scriptures, we have the Shastra, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which deals with Mahaprabhu's pastimes, there are some intriguing statements where we get some understanding about the difference of love and lust. Yes. So, love is compared to gold, whereas lust is compared to iron. So, bit of a difference. And of course, they're both metals, but yet they are very different in their values, right? So let us understand, what is love? So love means we are willing to sacrifice anything for the pleasure and satisfaction of the beloved. That example Srimati Radharani gives us. She is absolutely willing to sacrifice anything and everything. She says, actually, I'm not interested in my personal happiness. All I want is the happiness of Krishna. That's the goal of my life. And if it gives him happiness that I suffer distress, then that distress becomes the best of my happiness. Wow. That's a high level of love. What? Did you follow that? Yes? Did you follow Radharani's statement? That she's not interested in her happiness. All she wants is Krishna's happiness. And if the suffering she experiences gives Krishna happiness, then her suffering becomes the best of her happiness. I think if we had that approach in married life, we wouldn't have any marriage problems, right? Definitely no divorce. But yes, we're pretty far away from that. So that is pure love. So, and lust is rather different, if not to say the opposite. Lust means we are willing to do anything for my personal satisfaction. That's lust. You know? Very, very different. Yes. Yeah, so in pure love, there is no desire for personal enjoyment, for personal sense gratification. Absolutely none. Whereas lust, the main point is my personal satisfaction, my personal sense gratification, right? Yes. Yeah, so different. You know? And yes, we can say actually this man-woman relationship in one sense is the furthest away from pure love. I hope this is not too disappointing for people here. But I like to start this whole topic of married life with a bit of a sobering insights, you know? Yes, that this man-woman relationship, once we understand that pure love, there is no room for sense gratification. It's all about selfless sacrifice for the pleasure of the other person, you know? We can clearly understand, we have to admit that point, that in the man-woman relationship, actually in no other relationship, is that aspect of sense gratification as prominent as in that one. Right? Do we agree with that? Yes? Yes. You know? So, that makes it the furthest away from pure love. Yes. Yeah, it's furthest away. Actually, Prabhupada was giving us, you know, the example which relationship in this material world is closest to pure love. Any of you know?
Mother and child.
Exactly. That's the relationship which is closest to pure love. Although it's also not quite pure love, because there's also material attachment and material emotional attachment, emotional expectations are there. But out of all relationships, the mother-child relationship is the purest form of love we can find in this material world. Because to love actually means to serve. And anybody who is mother knows that being mother means you have to serve, whether you like it or not, 24/7, all around the year, right? Giving yourself unconditionally, almost, you know? Yes. Yeah, so that relationship is the closest to love, whereas this man-woman relationship is the furthest away. Yeah, so let's be very clear in this, that actually married life, this man-woman relationship, is not meant to give us, you know, to fulfill this longing for this divine, perfect, sublime love. It's not meant for it. We have to be very clear in this. Because if we are clear in this, then we don't enter married life with unrealistic expectations. You know? Because if we think this will satisfy this longing for love, we will guaranteed be so disappointed. It has to be. Because we have the wrong expectations. Right? Yes. Yes. So, which relationship is meant to fulfill this longing for perfect love?
With Krishna.
With Krishna, yes. So it may sound all a little, you know, lofty and theoretical for us, but as we sincerely practice Krishna consciousness, we can get some glimpses of that. You know? Yes. Yes. Yes, so the soul is longing for this perfect and sublime love because we all have an eternal loving relationship with the Lord, which is at the moment forgotten and lost. You know? And that's why we are longing for this love and we are always looking in the wrong direction. Yes. So this is what the whole process of Krishna consciousness is actually all about. To redirect our search for love into the right direction. So saying this, of course, does not mean that this man-woman relationship is all useless and unwanted or something. No. Oh, it is very much needed, actually. And especially also in spiritual life, for almost all people, very few exceptions. I was also married, by the way, so I definitely would not want to miss those 10 years of my married life, definitely not. Yes. Yeah, so, but married life actually has a different purpose in spiritual development. It is meant to give us stability in life so that our mind and senses are focused on one person. Yes. And that we have the support of our spouse and combinedly we help each other on this purifying journey of going back home, back to Godhead. That's the purpose. So it's a very different purpose than, you know, for non-devotees. There, the whole thing is enjoyment, sense gratification, and. But in spiritual life, of course, liking, attachment, this is all part of family life. Let's be clear on this. Oh my God. Sometimes we come across rather immature understandings that, you know, even in the early days of our society, we were thinking, oh, this married life is such an impediment, and it is the deep, dark well, and oh my God, and so better we marry somebody who we just don't like at all, and then we will not get attached. So, but meanwhile, we have gotten a bit more of a mature understanding on this topic. So, attachment, liking, attraction, that is all part of it. Otherwise, mind and senses may not be satisfied. Right? Yes. Yes. And the family may not stick together. So, the affectionate dealings, they are like the glue which keeps the family together. Yes. Yeah, so, and of course, we can find this in all spiritual cultures, in all religions, that there is this ceremony of marriage, right? Because actually it is understood in all religions that this man-woman relationship is actually distracting us the most from our attention to the Lord. And it is considered sinful. And that's why we find in any religion or spiritual path that there is this ceremony of wedding, of marriage, where we get the blessings of the Lord. And in that way, that man-woman relationship is sanctified, it's blessed. Yes. But without that, well, strictly speaking, it is sinful, which is, of course, very much against the modern understanding, no doubt. But yeah, I remember my mother telling me, she passed away last year at the age of 92, but she was telling me that even after the Second World War in Germany, it was considered illegal for a man and a woman to stay together in a hotel room or something unless they were married. So a hotel could not rent out a room, or guest house or private person could not rent out a room to a man and a woman who were not married. Wow, amazing, isn't it? I was blown out when she told me this. This is not even that long ago, right? How long is it ago? Oh, 75 years or something, you know, 45, the World War finished. So, not so long ago, in a progressive country like Germany, you were taken to court. Just see, you know, that's a sign how quickly Kali Yuga progresses, how quickly degradation sets in, you know, yes. And I mean, in India, it is still like that, you know, that they are very particular who they allowed to stay overnight in their hotels, you know. Yeah, that understanding is still preserved there, you know. Yeah, so, yes. So that's why, thank God, in all religions, there is still this institution of marriage there, right? And of course, as far as I understand, in all marriage ceremonies, the two individuals are making a promise. They're giving a vow in front of the Lord. Right? I think in Christianity this is also like that. Right? Yes. Yes. So, husband promises to give material, emotional, and spiritual shelter and protection to the wife, and the wife promises to serve him and support him and follow in his mood. So these are like the marriage vows we give. And yes, unfortunately, they are not always kept, these vows, unfortunately. You know? Yes, we also have to admit we have a pretty high divorce rate in our society. It's about, I have heard, it's about 60%, which is actually shocking. You know? And I'm pretty convinced that one reason is because we start the whole thing in a wrong way. We enter the whole thing. We approach the whole thing in a wrong way. And we're not getting enough education and training and help. Also. Yeah. That's why I published a whole book about this topic. Entering the Grihastha Ashram. How we should do it and how we should better not do it. Because I feel such a need to, oh my God, to do something about this. You know? Yes, yes. It's so painful to see when families separate and then the children are suffering, and it creates such, you know, traumatic experiences in the child's mind and creates so much disturbance and instability and, oh my God, you know. So to have a strong, you know, foundation of healthy and strong family life, stable family life, is of the greatest importance. It's like the foundation to our spiritual development. And if the foundation is strong and healthy, we can build, you know, this whole, you know, temple of bhakti there, you know. But if the foundation is all wonky and unstable and, there's all wars going on there, you know, we can't really build much at all, and very easily, you know, our whole attempts there of building our temple of bhakti in the heart may collapse, you know. So that's why we should not think, oh, this is just some material thing. No, it sets the foundation to our whole spiritual practice, you know. Yeah, so, and I mean, because this propaganda is so strongly now in the world that this man-woman relationship, it's all about love, and oh my God, you know, that's why even more so the marriages break up so easily. And the vows are not kept. This is another interesting point, that in spiritual life and its culture, one's word of honor is a big thing. You know, once we make a promise, we give our word of honor, it means we have to keep it by hook or by crook. We have to be ready to put our whole life upside down to keep our word. That should actually be the attitude. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have this nice example of Bali Maharaj, who promises three steps of land in charity to Vamanadev. So in Vamanadev, he was like a little dwarf, but then, you know, he expanded himself and his steps were huge. So Bali Maharaj could have had all reasons to say, oh, sorry, you know, this is a little unexpected here. I'm changing my mind. You know, I cannot give these three steps of land in charity. But no, he kept his word. He said, if I don't keep my word, then I'm a cheater. I'm a liar. You know, how can I do this? He was willing to give his very life to fulfill his promise. That is the attitude of a Vaishnava, actually. Yes. But then, in a culture where sense enjoyment is the goal of life, the main criteria is what pleases me and my mind and senses, right? Yes. So, and we may say something, and then later on, oh, now it's not so pleasing to my mind and senses anymore. Oh, it's all very unexpected now. I didn't expect this to happen. Sorry, I'm changing my mind. You know? That's the attitude in materialistic culture. Whatever suits me, I go along with that. And if I don't like it anymore, I'll drop it and walk out. But there is no room for this, actually, in Vaishnava life. We have to get back to this culture of one keeping one's word of honor, one's promise, no matter in what regard it may be. We may start with small things, because even in the small things we can't get it together to keep our word. How often do we make a commitment? Yes, I will do the service. I will cook the Sunday feast next week. And then 2 days before we ring, oh, sorry, something unexpected came. Sorry, can't do it. Actually, there is no room for this. Once we make a commitment and we say, yes, I'm doing it, then we have to stick to it. Actually, you know, that's the Vaishnav mood. We have to stick to our commitment. What to speak of initiation vows? You know? How often do we come across this, that devotees promise to follow the four principles, chant 16 rounds, but then, oh sorry, can't do it anymore. You know? And I found a few, I came across a few heavy statements, you know, in regards to that, where Prabhupada says, so, why did you promise then? What is this? He really chastises the devotees. You know? You promised. You know? Yes. But this understanding is somehow completely lost today, you know? It probably was there also 60, 70, 80 years ago. You know? But now, where the mood is more and more just pleasure and sense gratification, it is lost. Oh yes, I can hear some conch tapping there. Yes, looks like time is up. But I was allowed to maybe have a couple more minutes, if you don't mind. Yes, one more little thing I wanted to mention, which may also be relevant for some of you. And it is, by the way, also a title of one chapter in that pinkish book there. The title is called, I Don't Want to Get Married. So, this approach, I don't want to get married, actually, it is a mundane approach, because I don't want, this is the platform of the mind. Today I don't want, tomorrow I want, you know? It's a very unreliable source of instruction. We don't consult the mind when we practice devotional life. It's not a question of what I want or what I don't want, you know. It's the mundane approach. Also, it shows that attitude, I know what I want, and I don't want to get married. But actually, the spiritual and devotional approach is, will it be helpful for me to get married? For my spiritual development, will it be helpful? Will it be purifying for me to go through this journey of married life? So that's a whole different approach, isn't it? Yes. It shows this mood of humbly inquiring, asking our seniors, our guru, our mentor, do you think it will be helpful for me to get married? That's a whole different approach. Right? Yes. 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 But this mood of I want, I don't want, not such a right approach in Krishna consciousness. It's not the question of what I want. You know? Yes. I may not want, but everybody else may see that it would be so helpful for us. You know? But we may not be able to see because we are attached to what we want. Right? Yes. Yes. Yeah, so it is a whole big topic, you know. Yes. I mean, there's so many more things I wanted to say, but time is kind of up and I don't want to get into trouble too much by going too much over time. But let me see if maybe we have one or two quick questions. We'll start maybe with you, Prabhu. Do we have a microphone for him?
I have a similar problem because I read in Sri Aurobindo's book that if you are on, in a boundary level, not it's higher than astral that I'm living now. And
the boundary level?
But meno področje without this. When you are in this, that you should only relate to your brains. Only your brains, and not any other voices, no feeling, because it's not reliable. You can be a fanatic for Krishna, but that may not save you. How to open myself to Krishna at the same time to rely on my brains?
Thank you.
Not quite understanding, especially the connection to the topic.
Because you said...
How to open myself to Krishna and not relying on my brain?
And to rely on my brain at the same time.
On my?
Brain at the same time, to rely.
And how is this connected with our topic of family life?
Because I was thinking, I do not want to be Krishna conscious. I do not want to be fanatic, but it's only a mind. I want to open myself to Krishna and at the same time to transform my mind for the better.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure whether I can...
Okay, you answer.
You know, I somehow can't see the connection to the topic and I'd rather accept some questions which are somehow
I apologize.
Related. Yeah. So, but maybe we can talk afterwards privately, if you like. Okay? So let us see if we have some questions which are more related to the topic. There is one hand up.
Hare Krishna Mataji. I would like to ask about the vows that we were speaking. Where to find strength to keep these vows like lifelong? Where do we take shelter to be really like men of our world?
Well, have a guess. Have a guess where we find the strength. Of course, in Krishna. You know, mainly in our sadhana. In our God consciousness. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, even in Christianity, it was a completely normal thing to stick to your vows and your word of honor. There was no divorce and all this, you know. So they were not even chanting Hare Krishna, you know. But still they had that strength, you know. Because basically people were more God conscious. And God was really in the center of their life, you know. And they understood, I gave this promise in front of God. So how can I break it? You know? That understanding was there. I'm sure also here in Slovenia, and maybe still in the villages or something, people still may have that attitude. You know? Yes. Yes. So it's all about becoming Krishna conscious. And thank God we have the practice of sadhana, of chanting the holy name, of reading Prabhupada's books, of accepting guru, accepting a mentor who helps us to balance our spiritual life. So if we actually practice a balanced spiritual life, then we will hopefully get to this point where we have that strength, you know? And I mean, I'm not sure in what regards you are asking now the vows, whether it's more the marriage vows or the initiation vows.
Yeah, both.
But actually, no matter which vows it is, one secret of success is to have a mentor. a well-wishing friend who is more experienced than we are, who can guide us, who has no other interest except our spiritual development. It's not just the Diksha Guru, but somebody more on a regular basis. If we have such a person in our life, any challenge can be overcome. Because this is such an important topic, that's why I also published a book on that. It's called Sheltering Relationships. It's such an important topic. We have lost so many devotees over the last 50 years because we have not understood the importance of having such a well-wishing friend in our life. Because if we don't have that, sooner or later, life is full of challenges. My God, isn't it? Full of challenges. Yes, and also Krishna is testing us, how sincere we are. And if we don't have such a deep, trusting relationship, confidential relationship, where we can open our heart and share our innermost struggles and fears, very easily, what do? We take shelter of our false ego, and we will be gone. We will get offended about something, and we won't show up anymore, and we will give up the process of Krishna consciousness. You know, yes. So, very important topic, you know. Yes. Any challenge can be overcome if we are willing to take guidance from somebody who has already more experience meeting that same challenge, you know. And there's always people who have, you know. Yes. Any one last question? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Mataji, for your lecture today. I take this topic as a concern for marriages that are happening in ISKCON and breakups. So I would like to ask if you can expand the perspective of approach to a marriage, because I want to just emphasize that what you said, usually when couples come together, they don't think of taking this as a responsibility, but it's a mutual life together. So I like what you said, that the main goal should be a service to a spouse. And if you don't have this kind of perspective and mentality, I don't think it's actually good to go into a marriage, because it's going to happen what is happening right now. So if you can expand maybe a little bit about the approach, how to look at this, and also what I see is lack of self-love. Let's say that this is a new age term, but it is important as well if a person in a marriage forgets about himself and takes the perspective of service, just going through their capacities. I think they're losing themselves as well in the relationship, in the marriage. Thank you.
Well, this is a big topic.
I'm sorry.
But, I mean, I don't want to, you know, come across as if I'm just here promoting my books or something. But if you're interested in this topic, please get this book. It's actually like a handbook for matchmaking. Yes. Because there's many nice statements in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says that actually, you know, man, woman, they should not just find each other, because very easily then the attraction is simply mainly the physical attraction, and that wears off statistically after 18 months. Yes. But there has to be some deeper levels of compatibility there. Prabhupada says character and taste. If they differ, the combination will be unhappy. Yes. And there's so many devotional compatibilities there. you know, which have to be really looked at with a cool head. See, the problem is that this man-woman relationship is such a sensual and emotional one. And immediately the two involved have the pink glasses on, right? And everything looks so rosy, you know? Yes. But these pink glasses, they wear off. And once the daily routine sets in, then you realize, oh, you know, why did I marry this person? We have different goals and visions and standards we want to follow and, you know, yes, yes. So that's why traditionally it was actually the duty of the parents, right, to find a suitable partner for their child, you know. So, and of course, today, most of our parents are not even in Krishna consciousness. So that's why, actually, every community should have a matchmaking committee. Yes. Some of you may find this sounds really strange and whatever, you know, but no, my God. I'm traveling quite wildly all around the world, Australia, New Zealand, US, so many places. No matter where I go, I find this is such a need. There's so many ladies who would love to be married. There's so many men who are all unsure and afraid and you know. So, and there's just nobody who helps people. That's the problem. Yes. Yes. But then there are temples who have matchmaking committees. And this brings so much stability in people's personal lives and also in the whole community. Because if there's nobody there who helps the devotees with this, then what happens? The temple becomes like a scenario where people chat each other up and go hunting and fishing, as I may like to say. And that contaminates the whole atmosphere. Yes. Yes, it does. It contaminates the whole atmosphere. Even the holy dharma, Mayapur Vrindavan, you know, has become a place for people to try and find a partner. You know? Even the Parikrama, Navadvipa Mandala Parikrama, or Gaur Mandala Parikrama, or Raj Mandala Parikrama. Many people go on the Parikrama in the hope that they find a partner to marry. Ah, oh, but it shouldn't be like that, you know? No, we have to keep the atmosphere pure, you know? And that's why we need matchmaking committee. Yes, and I mean, during the pandemic, I was not only writing the book, but because I couldn't travel so much, I actually put a few couples together. But please don't all come now and say, oh, can you help me? You know, because now I'm back on tour and it takes quite a bit of time to, you know. But yeah, you know, if one knows a few principles, what it takes for a man and woman to match and the whole man-woman dynamics and feminine energy, how the feminine energy is meant to empower the male nature, and by the way, I'm describing that in the spiritual culture book. You know, once we get a deeper understanding about these things, you know, yeah, it's not so difficult, you know. And of course, the ultimate decision is always up to the individual. You know, the matchmaker simply makes the pre-selection and sifts a little bit, you know, who could match and who is on a similar wavelength and similar standards and goals and level of renunciation and commitment, and this all has to match, you know? Yes, yes. And then there's a whole list of over 100 topics which the two should discuss with a cool head, without the pink glasses on, if possible at all, you know. So it's a whole process. So if you're interested in that, well, maybe you want to check it out.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, I think I've really stretched my time here to the maximum. Sorry for that. So, but tomorrow evening, 7 to 8, we will continue with this topic, and there we will get a little bit more into a few secrets of success of actual married life. So today, because it's a Sunday program, a more general audience, I was just giving a few general points to start off with. So I hope to see you back tomorrow evening, 7 to 8. And if anybody is interested, you know, there's also a book about false ego. Ooh, family life can be the battlefield for false egos. You know, interesting and relevant topics. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.